On today's episode of Card Subject to Change, Nick and CZ have a run-in from the head coach of the Black and Brave Wrestling Academy. SCW Pro's own Merrick Brave is in studio to talk all things wrestling with the fastest rising podcast tag team on the For Frequency's Sake podcast network. Be sure to subscribe to For Frequency's Sake on all your favorite podcast platforms for the latest episodes of Educated Ignorance, The Data Lab, Cards Up to Change, and other great podcast content. Now it's time to head to the ring for today's episode of Cards Subject to Change.
Hey, thank you very much, Joe Winkle, for that outstanding intro. My name is the Wizard CZ, and I will tell you that Nick Bull is not with me. He has not been cleared to compete for this episode of the podcast tonight, but I'm not flying solo in the studio with me. Like Joe said, SCW Pro Zone, Merrick Brave. Merrick, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's a pleasure having you on the show. I'm glad you could fit us into your schedule. I know you got a lot going on. Father of two, promoting SCW, head coach of the Black and Brave Wrestling Academy. We'll get into all that, but thanks for coming on. Appreciate you joining us for the show today.
Yeah, happy to be here. Excited to see what we can dig into.
And I know you and I talked off air, Nick and I, with this podcast, our focus is all about being a fan of wrestling and not so much the insides of the business. So that's what we're going to talk about for the most part. My first question to you, as a fan, how did you get into wrestling? What brought you into liking and loving the product?
Gosh, I was probably about 5 years old. So we're talking like 1991. And I was actually living in Kansas at the time. I didn't move to the Quad Cities until 1997. I'm actually originally from New Hampshire, so I kind of moved all over as a little kid. But when I was living in Kansas, I had a neighbor named Brad who was a huge wrestling fan, and I had no idea what it was. And so one day we were playing outside, as little kids do, and he was like, "Hey, do you want to jump on the trampoline and we can wrestle?" And I was like, "Okay, sure," even though I didn't know what that meant. And he was like, "I'll be Shawn Michaels and you can be The Undertaker." And I had no idea who The Undertaker was or how he acted or what he looked like or anything like that. So my little five-year-old brain envisioned an old-school deep-sea diver with, like, all the hoses coming out of the suit and the big, you know, dome-shaped helmet with the glass face mask there. And, you know, we wrestled around on the trampoline for a little while, and then he was like, "Hey, come over to my house and we can watch some wrestling on VHS tape." And he popped one in and showed me who The Undertaker was, and I was like, "Whoa, I was way off. He is nothing like I thought he was going to be," and he scared the crap out of me. So from that moment on, I was hooked, and we're talking, I mean, that's over 30 years ago at this point. So I've been a wrestling fan ever since.
So that being said, who was your favorite wrestler growing up? Who did you gravitate towards while you're watching and getting into the product?
I have always been a giant Shawn Michaels fan. Even to this day, he's still my favorite wrestler of all time. You can put on, I mean, nearly any Shawn Michaels match, and I'm going to sit down and watch it all the way through. I think he's just the best all-around performer, you know, for my money, that the business has ever produced. You know, decent on the microphone, but his in-ring skills are second to none. So always a Shawn Michaels fan. As I got older, I learned to appreciate Ric Flair quite a bit. So at this point, I'd put him at my number two spot. And then, you know, my fellow coaches and I, we always have a debate over who we put at number three. And that's where the debate starts as far as in-ring workers for us. So can't really narrow it down to one person at number two. But if you're asking me my number one favorite pro wrestler of all time, you know, even back in the early 90s, it was Shawn Michaels. So still is.
And he's got to be at the top. He's definitely towards the top of my list, if not the very top. He's right on there. Very, very good choice. I can't argue with that at all. Now, this is kind of an inside question here. You know, you've got your faces, you've got your heels. When in your watching wrestling, did you start appreciating the bad guy wrestlers, and who did you gravitate towards when you did?
That's an interesting question. I definitely wasn't, you know, it was different in the 90s. The internet wasn't really a thing. at least for me as a little kid. So you didn't really get into the quote unquote smart mark aspect of the business at that time. And I was just a kid. So I cheered for the good guys and I hated the bad guys. So I'm not sure when I started appreciating the bad guys for what they did. I do remember being very upset when Shawn Michaels formed the Generation X with Triple H, because I was like, no, like, and people were still cheering him. And I was only maybe 11 years old at this time. So I was still cheering for the good guys. And he wasn't acting like a good guy anymore. He was being a jerk. And I remember just almost feeling betrayed in that moment. I'm not sure I can give you a straight answer. You know, at some point I learned about the inside nature of professional wrestling and the difference between the baby faces and the heels and you know, learned that it was choreographed and whatnot. And at that point I probably started to appreciate the bad guys more. But I mean, as a kid I had wrestlers that I enjoyed that were bad guys. I really liked Owen Hart. I really liked Yokozuna. I really liked Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldog, even when he was a heel. I really liked Goldust just because he was so unique and different.
Absolutely.
And entertaining. And then, you know, the bad guy, Razor Ramon, was probably my second favorite wrestler growing up. He wasn't necessarily a heel, but with the moniker, the bad guy, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention him. So. I don't know. I can't tell you when I first started enjoying the bad guys, but I mean, if you're asking me who I feel is the best bad guy of that time, I'm going to go right to Ric Flair. I just thought he was a great antagonizer, and I always thought he put his baby face over really, really well. We always say he takes an entertaining ass kicking, so hopefully I can say that.
And one thing that I appreciate about Flair, I'm glad you brought him up, because he's the kind of guy that you learn to respect for his work ethic and his abilities in the ring, despite the fact that he's the antagonist on the screen.
Yeah, absolutely. He's just, I mean, you're fixated on him. You're drawn to him when you see him perform. He's just got that charisma that you can't touch. You know, maybe the most charismatic superstar of all time.
I can agree with that for sure. So you're an adult now. You've been in the wrestling business for almost 20 years. So when you sit back now, as you've gone through, and we'll talk about your other dealings here, you're in the ring dealings in a few minutes, but as you're an adult now and you look back, with the ability to go back and watch, old pay-per-views, old shows, what is your, if you were to sit back right now, put on a pay-per-view that you just absolutely love or any kind of event, what would be your go-to show that you as a fan would turn on right now?
So if I really just want to, are you talking like a specific match or just a full on event or,
either or both?
So if I'm trying to watch a match that I know I'm going to enjoy, you know, with Shawn Michaels being my favorite, I go to a lot of his classics. So, in my opinion, the greatest professional wrestling match to ever happen was Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker at WrestleMania 25. So that's a fantastic one to turn on if you're looking to enjoy a nice spectacle. For nostalgia's sake, and it was also a great match and a great display of technical wrestling, but WrestleMania 12 Iron Man match, Shawn versus Bret, over an hour's long bit of action there. And that's just, I mean, now being a professional wrestler myself for almost 20 years, just the fact that they could go out there, main event at WrestleMania for over an hour and keep people enthralled the entire time, that's just a tremendous feat. SummerSlam 2002, Shawn's return match against Triple H, in the street fight that they had, that is just a masterpiece made even better when you consider the fact that he hadn't performed in over 4 years at that time. So that's tremendous. I mean, and then, you know, if you go outside of Shawn Michaels, you got plenty of Ric Flair matches to choose from. I'm not sure I could narrow down a favorite, although I probably would pick his retirement match against Shawn Michaels.
That is one of my all-time favorites for sure.
Yeah, that's a tremendous match. So, I don't know. As far as favorite events, I'm not sure I could narrow it down to one specific event. I like specific matches from many different events. But if you're talking matches, I'm always going to go back to my boy Sean.
I understand that. Which kind of segues into, and I have two questions here. One is going to be a follow-up because that, excuse me, I've heard this story from you in previous interviews, but for our audience, talk about how you got into wrestling, how you started in the business.
Well, so I was in high school, and I went to a high school in the Quad Cities called Bettendorf High School, and me and my high school friends decided we were going to sleep overnight at, I think it's called Vibrant Arena now, but it was the Mark of the Quad Cities, the arena here in the Quad Cities, directly across the river in Moline, Illinois. We decided we were going to stay over the night so that we could get some tickets to a SmackDown taping that was happening at the Mark. And then when we got there, it was late at night, and there were these kids. They were wrestling around in the grass and in the mulch in front of the Mark. And that later, you know, I later learned that, and that person became Seth Rollins, who's my business partner now and a longtime friend. This was the day before my 16th birthday. So we're literally over 20 years at this point. But, you know, my group of friends saw their group of friends, and they were doing some cool stuff, you know, moonsaults and all this crazy stuff just on the ground. And we're like, man, these guys are nuts, but they're pretty cool too. So why don't we go chat with them? And we just hit it off right away. And during the course of that night, they told us about essentially a backyard promotion called SCW. At the time, SCW stood for Steve and Chuck Wrestling. Steve Youngblood and a young man named Chuck Medician, who hasn't been with SCW in 20 years. So anyways, you know, they told us about them, and they were doing these shows in a barn at Steve Youngblood's parents' house. And we were like, man, that sounds really cool. And if it's anything like these guys rolling around on the grass out here, I think we're going to enjoy it. So we ended up going to that. I think it was like $2 to get in, and you had to climb an old rickety ladder to get to the second level of this barn. And they had a makeshift ring that had turnbuckles drilled into the posts of the, you know, the support pillars of this barn. And then the mat, so to speak, was made out of used mattresses and old high school gym wrestling mats. And we sat there for, I don't know how long it was, 2-3 hours, and watched this show. And we just thought it was the coolest thing we had ever seen. And then after the show, they were like, all right, if anybody wants to get in the ring and you know, mess around, have at it. Which, if anyone's listening to this nowadays and thinks that that's still an option, it is definitely not. Not at this stage of the game. My insurance would be quite upset. But me and my buddy Keith, we got in the ring, and we were avid trampoline jumpers at the time. So we had some gymnastic-y skills. And my buddy Keith did a front flip, and I did a back flip. And I think it was Nevin Knoxville. He looked at us and he said, you guys are in. You are in SCW. And we were ecstatic. So, shortly after that, we were told we could no longer wrestle in the barn. And so we acquired an actual professional wrestling ring. And it was delivered to a church on 3rd Street, actually just a few blocks down from the Black and Brave Wrestling Academy now. And I was 17 years old. It was a hot summer day. They delivered the ring. We set it up and spent the next 8 hours learning how to run the ropes and take bumps. And then we progressed to doing some crazy stuff off the top rope, which I wouldn't advocate for on your first day of wrestling training. But from that day forward, I had my first professional wrestling match in August of 2003 when I was 17 years old in front of a paying audience of probably about 100 people, which at that time was fantastic. And I never looked back from there. I've been doing it ever since with some brief hiatuses due to injury, but I've always been a part of the wrestling business ever since that day in 2003.
That's awesome. Now, you were trained by Danny Daniels, correct?
Yep, myself and Seth Rollins, Tyler Black, Colby Lopez, whatever you want to call them. We were the only two graduates of Danny Daniels' first training class, and that was October through December of 2004.
How did you get in contact with Danny? How did that come about?
So originally, I was wrestling all throughout my senior year of high school, And Rollins, he knew he wanted to be a professional wrestler from the time he was like 12 years old. And I more so just looked at it as like a fun thing to do with my friends. And you know, everybody would tell me, hey, you're really good at this. You know, maybe you should look into this as a career. But to me, that just didn't seem plausible or possible. You got to remember, 20 years ago, nobody went from being an independent wrestler to being in WWE. Nobody was making a living off of professional wrestling on the independent scene either. So it just it didn't seem like a proper career choice. And I had gotten some scholarships to go to the University of Iowa, and I was going to be an elementary school teacher. And so I was dating a girl who was a year older than me, and she was at the University of Iowa, and she kind of had our whole future planned out. We were going to go to school together and then live together and then graduate and so on and so forth. And I just remember thinking all throughout my senior year that that was not something that I wanted to do. To be honest, the fact of going to the University of Iowa and leaving my home and living in a dorm with a bunch of strangers and showering in communal showers, like it just, it all sounded terrifying to me. So one day, you know, close to graduation, Rollins was like, hey, I'm going to wrestling school. You know, you should come too. Well, he was going to wrestling school out in Pennsylvania with CM Punk at Ring of Honor, and I could not afford to do that. My family didn't have any money growing up, and I wasn't a big fan of working in high school. I just wanted to mess around with my buddies, so I would just do little odd jobs if I ever needed cash. So I didn't have any money saved up and definitely could not afford to go to the Ring of Honor school with CM Punk. So I was like, you know what? You go do that. I'll find a school around here. Maybe in the Chicagoland area, and you know, when we're done, we'll meet up and continue from there. Well, things kind of fell through, and he was out in Pennsylvania, and he ran out of money. And in the meantime, the trainer who I was going to train with, Eric Priest from Chicago, who's a tremendous professional wrestler from Chicago, his training class was it kept getting delayed over and over and over again. And so Rollins was like, hey, man, I got to leave Pennsylvania. I'm going to come back home, but I still want to be a pro wrestler. So I'm going to come to the school that you're going to train at. And I was like, well, that's all well and good, except for the fact that I don't know when this class is going to start. It keeps getting delayed. And he was like, well, let me do some research. And then he found that Danny Daniels was opening the school. And he was a huge fan of Danny Daniels when we were going to independent shows in high school. I, however, was not. And I always tell this story to Danny. I was like, I don't want to go to Danny Daniels. He's short and fat. I want to go to Eric Priest. He's tall and strong. He knows what he's doing. But it wasn't an option to go to Eric Priest anymore. So it was either get trained by Danny Daniels or get trained by no one. And in hindsight, that was a tremendous decision because Danny's an absolutely fantastic professional wrestler, and he was a really good professional wrestling trainer as well. And after we graduated from his school in December of 2004, he got us booked on some really, you know, good promotions. That was back when IWA Mid-South was one of the top independents in all of the country. And we immediately got on shows with CM Punk and Colt Cabana and Jimmy Jacobs and Alex Shelley and Matt Sydal, Delirious and Eddie Kingston and Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli, and the list goes on and on and on and on. And we're 18-year-old kids doing that at that point and learning the ropes that way. So that was a tremendous opportunity for us. So all of that would not have been possible if we hadn't gotten trained by Danny Daniels. So we just approached him at an indie show that we went to his fans. And we said, hey, we heard that you're looking to train some people. We would like to be part of that class. And so he said, all right, well, you're the first two. Go find two more because I'm not going to do a class for less than four people. So we found some other guys here in the Quad Cities who eventually started with us, but they dropped out about halfway through. We started driving to Chicago multiple times a week to learn the ropes, literally and figuratively.
So how was training for Danny? I've heard a lot of horror stories about how people were trained back in the old days. I know that's not how you handle things now, and that's not the way the business has evolved into, but how was your training? What was it like being in the ring learning from Danny?
Well, there's something to be said about those old school horror stories, you know, like especially back then when the secrets of the business weren't readily available at your fingertips on the internet. Like you had to kind of safeguard the business a little bit back before everybody knew it was a work. So I don't want to completely disparage old school training methods. And, you know, I myself like to blend a little bit of the old school with a lot of the new school. But training with Danny was great. He was tough on us. Don't get me wrong. On first day of training, I think we did 500 Hindu squats and a couple hundred push-ups and, you know, a few hundred jumping jacks and sit-ups and wall sits. It was a whole lot of conditioning. It was essentially a conditioning test to see where we were at physically. And then we got into the room, and he was like, all right, take a bump. And we did, because we had been wrestling for a year and a half at that point on shows. And we had been doing day camps with plenty of independent wrestlers that knew what they were doing, what they were talking about. So, I mean, for being 18 years old, we were pretty darn good at that point. So after that first day, he pulled us aside and he was like, listen, like, I know I told you it was going to cost this much, but if you guys come here, I'll knock off $500 a piece, which could have been some sort of carny ploy. I'm not sure. I still don't know to this day. But if you come here, I'll knock off $500 from the price I quoted you, because I think you guys are great and I can help you. But you guys can also help me by becoming, good professional wrestlers and then letting everybody know that I was the one who trained you. So it was a bit of a synergistic relationship in the beginning. But Danny was a great trainer. He taught us everything we needed to know. And when he thought that, you know, basically he couldn't teach us anymore and we could only learn from performing in front of live audiences, he set us free. And we actually went with him to all of his bookings for the first 2, 3, 4 months. And he got us booked on all of them. And almost every show, we were wrestling against each other. It was me versus Rollins, usually about 8 to 10 minutes in the opening match every single time. And we were blowing people away. People were like, wow, you know, two young, good-looking, athletic, acrobatic dudes that could be, you know, the future of independent wrestling, at least here in the Midwest. So, again, without Danny, none of that would have been possible. So we're still very thankful to him for that opportunity to this day.
That sounds amazing. Merrick, I want to go back to some of the names that you were dropping, but we do have to pay our dues to our podcast promoters here. So I'm going to drop for a quick commercial break and then we'll come right back to it. Okay.
No problem.
Make sure you tune into For Frequency's Sake on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch each Sunday during the football season from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. The boys from For Fantasy's Sake will be bringing the fire fantasy football takes, updating you on the week's rankings and injuries, and getting you ready for your fantasy football matchups each and every week. The show is interactive, so be sure to send your questions. You can find them at For Frequency's Sake on Facebook, at FFSQC on Twitter, or you can send them an email at forfantasysakeqc@gmail.com.
All right, so you were mentioning a handful of names, more than a handful. Two of them stood out to me. You mentioned Jimmy Jacobs, you mentioned Delirious. Rumor has it that you were at one point slated to be a part of a big group in ROH called Age of the Fall. Talk to me about that. How did that come about, and what was the ultimate decision? Why was the ultimate decision made not to be a part of that?
Well, unfortunately for me, you are correct. I was supposed to be an original member for Age of the Fall. It was supposed to be myself, Tyler Black, and Jimmy Jacobs. But unfortunately for me, during our Ring of Honor tryout match, it was myself and Rollins versus the Briscoe Brothers. I went for a reverse hurricanrana on one of the Briscoe brothers. And for anybody that doesn't know what that move is, it's when you're sitting on the other person's shoulders facing the same direction, but then you go backwards with your legs wrapped around the person's head, and then they flip over the top of you. And we had discussed it in the back, and they said that was no problem. Everybody knew what was going on and they could take that move properly and safely. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. So I think it was, I want to say it was Jay Briscoe. I went for the move, and instead of flipping, he essentially just took a back bump on top of me when I was upside down. So my forehead was planted on the mat with my whole body upside down, and then his body on top of mine. So if you pause the video right at the exact moment, you can see the back of my skull touching in between my shoulder blades on my back. It looks like I was decapitated. So, unfortunately, that was a very serious neck injury. That happened in 2007. So we're talking, 15 years ago, over 15 years ago. And I'm still dealing with the effects of that. I had eventually gotten spinal fusion surgery in 2018 to deal with the lingering effects from that injury. But because of that injury, I was not able to perform up to the standards that I had set for myself at that time. I was very much dealing with residual pain, stiffness. Anytime I worked out, it felt like somebody had stapled a 2x4 to my spine for weeks afterwards. So my physique was slipping. And I wasn't able to do all of the moves that I had kind of been known for. I was a high flyer back in the day, and I was doing the shooting star presses and the acai moonsaults and the lion salts and all of that stuff. And unfortunately, with a serious neck and spine injury, that was just not something that I was going to be able to do anymore. And later on, a few years after the fact, when I finally was able to afford to get an MRI, because when I had originally suffered the injury, I was a 20-year-old kid with no health insurance, couldn't afford any of that stuff. And so when I went to the hospital, they stretched me out of the ring down in Florida when the injury happened, and they rushed me to the hospital in an ambulance. And when I got there, they realized I didn't have health insurance, so they just gave me a quick X-ray, which doesn't show any of the discs in between the vertebrae and your spine. And so they weren't able to discern that I actually had two bulging discs that were literally centimeters away from herniating into my spinal column, which would have left me paralyzed from the neck down for the rest of my life. So because of that injury, I was no longer – I don't want to say I wasn't allowed to be part of Age of the Fall, because I wasn't really letting on how severe my injury was at that time. I wasn't really telling anyone. So the plan, even after the injury, was for me to still be a part of the group. But on the day that Rollins and I were supposed to go back to Florida for the second quote-unquote tryout match, which was more of a like a wink-wink, come down, get through the match, sign your contract, and you'll be good to go, I bailed. I told him, I said, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to come. I want to quit the wrestling business, basically because I knew that I couldn't live up to the standards that I had set for myself. And I also couldn't live up to the standards that a written amateur performer had to perform at back in the day. Those were the top independent wrestlers in the world. And so I didn't want to go out there and embarrass myself, embarrass my team, and embarrass the company. So instead of explaining that to everyone, which was a dumb kid mistake, I just bailed. And I said, you know what? I don't like wrestling anymore. I'm going to quit. And instead of getting in a car to drive down to Florida, I got on an airplane and flew out to California for a week. And that was that's the whole story. That's the reason why I wasn't part of Age of the Fall. And they ended up doing some tremendous things. And I wish I could tell you that I wish I would have done it differently and given it a shot. But even to this day, I'm positive that at that time, I didn't know how to work any other style other than the acrobatic, cruiserweight, high flyer style. And I don't think I would have done well. Later, I did learn how to work properly, and now I can blend a bunch of different styles together. And if I had the knowledge then that I do now, I would have been A-okay. But yeah, it was that neck injury that really derailed my career and my aspirations of making it big as an in-ring performer in the professional wrestling business. But things have a way of working out, and I'm happy where I'm at now. So it's not all, doom and gloom.
Yeah. And I understand that. That's, you probably made the best decision for your health overall. That does bring me to a great question that I've written down here. You had to retire several years ago, but you've recently gotten back in the ring with SCW. How did it feel when you stepped back in the ring here in the last few months to go back and do what you love doing?
Yeah, my first match back was against JT Energy in April at Wildwood in Iowa City. And it was a surreal feeling hearing the music play and heading to the ring in my old garb and hearing the audience go crazy for it, and then going out there and not to toot my own horn, but having a damn good pro wrestling match with somebody who I trained and taught them everything they know and brought into the business. And Energy is a fantastic performer in his own right. So I'm not trying to take anything away from him. And he absolutely enhanced that match and took care of me and kept me safe and allowed me to, you know, pull my weight and together, I think we made some magic that night. So it's been great. And my whole goal on this run over the last few months is to wrestle people I've never wrestled before and to wrestle a bunch of my students who never got an opportunity to wrestle me, let alone see me wrestle. And I think I've accomplished a lot of fun things. And I think I've been able to prove to the audience, but also prove to myself that I haven't lost a step. And every time I go out there, you know, from the time I was 17 years old to the time, you know, just this past weekend, you know, at the age of 36, you're going to get the best that I can possibly offer. And, you know, again, not to toot my own horn, but I think that's pretty good. I think that's a pretty good effort.
And I'll be honest, I haven't been out to see SCW Pro for a few months. I'm anxious to get out and see you back in the ring. My new job is going to hinder that, but I'm excited that you were able to get back in the ring, and I like what everything you're saying. You said a word that struck a chord with me. You said the word magic. I remember back in my ring announcing days 10 years ago, it was spring. It was an SCW Pro show. I want to say it was Epic. But for me, as a ring announcer, the whole night just felt absolutely magical to me. Talk about that. What do you remember as your most magical night in the business?
That's an interesting question. I would say I don't want to use a cop out, but you know, a lot of the nights are magical because you spend your whole life growing up a fan of this business that seems so close but so far away, right? Like you can watch it and it can be part of your everyday life, but it seems so unachievable and unattainable that you'll ever get an opportunity to create the magic that you've enjoyed for so many years. And then one day you're given the opportunity, and one day you're able to do it. And then for many days after that, as long as you keep doing well and working hard, you're able to continue to do it. And that's not to say that every time you go out there, it's going to be, you know, sunshine and rainbows and butterflies and whatnot, because you do have a lot of crappy nights in the business. But as far as my most magical moment, I'd love to say it was my no-roped barbed wire match against Tyler Black for AAW back in 2006, 2007, somewhere in there. It was the night I won the AAW Heavyweight Championship. It was the culmination of a year-long feud. It was the first time AAW had ever sold out the Eagles Club in Berwyn, Illinois. And we tore the house down, and the match was voted the best match in Chicago for the year of 2006, which is crazy considering how many promotions run in Chicago. And I think it was an opportunity for Rollins and myself to show, you know, the viewing public that we weren't just those long-haired pretty boys doing the flips, that we could go out there and tell you a really good story, and we could put our bodies on the line, and we could be brutal. And at that time, that just wasn't something that non-deathmatch wrestlers did. You didn't see people using barbed wire in their matches unless, like I said, they were deathmatch wrestlers. So it was quite the spectacle, and everybody wanted to turn out to see it. We sold the building out, and then we tore the house down. So that was a pretty magical night. The only thing that tarnishes it for me is I actually had food poisoning for a couple days leading up to that match, and then the day of the match, I had pretty severe food poisoning. So it was coming out both ends right up until the match started. And I mean, I remember just sleeping in the locker room underneath, you know, one of the tables in there the entire day, and then just waking up and slowly putting on my gear and trying to get a match together. And I think, you know, to my credit, if you watch that match back, you wouldn't be able to tell that I wasn't even close to full strength for that one. So I'm very happy I was able to to turn in a stellar performance that night. But there's been so many just magical nights. I think another one that I can recall is when we had Vader in, rest in peace to Vader, but we had Vader in to SCW, and myself and Shane Hollister ended up tagging with him in a six-man tag team match. And I remember coming out first with Hollister and then hearing the music hit, and then, you know, it's time, it's Vader time. And I just had flashbacks to when I was a kid and I would watch Vader wrestle on TV, and I had, you know, Vader action figures that I would play with, you know, as a child. And then to hear his music and to have him be a tag team partner of mine on a show that I was promoting, and like, it was just magical. And then a third one, when we had Ric Flair in SCW a handful of years ago, and I got to share the ring with him, and we got to cut a promo to open the show. We got to cut that promo together. And him being one of my favorite performers of all time, that was also magical. So there's so many, it's hard to narrow it down, but I just gave you three. So
that's fantastic. You mentioned Ric Flair's match. I was there for that. Brings me to a roundabout way getting to this question here. So obviously Walcott Coliseum is SCW's home. Wildwood has to be its second home right now. You guys have been at the Call Ballroom. You've been at the Rust Belt. You personally have wrestled in Chicago at least the Berwyn Eagles Club. What is your favorite spot to wrestle? What is the best building that you've ever been in to work?
I mean, when I was younger, we were making the towns all across the Midwest, all across the country, really. There was a really fun venue in Indiana that was like almost kind of like the Betplex here in the Quad Cities, where it was just a multi-purpose sports facility. And they would kind of let us have free reign of the place. So we'd get there early and we'd be shooting hoops, and then we'd go get a workout in the gym and then take showers. And it was very rare for an indie wrestling venue to have showers back then, kind of still is. So I remember really liking that particular venue. I wrestled in a handful of theaters. I always really like wrestling in theaters where they put the ring on the stage, and then the audience has like the stadium style seating just okay. On one side of the ring. It makes it unique and different and challenging in a way. But I always like doing that. There was a fun building in Milwaukee, Wisconsin that kind of like Wildwood had, it was like a two-tiered building. So there was a balcony so you could look up and see fans looking directly down on you. I liked that building. I love wrestling in Wildwood. For that same reason. I think there's a fun ambiance. And then the Cole Ballroom was great. We packed that place with, you know, I think we had 650 people there for our first event there, and I ended up wrestling in the main event that night. And the Cole Ballroom just has so much history. I mean, Johnny Cash has performed there. Elvis has performed there. And then I got to perform there. So I'm a big guy and a big fan of you know, the older music, the classic music. So that wasn't lost on me. I was very, very grateful to be able to get that opportunity.
I was very disappointed to hear that the Call was closing several years ago for all those same reasons.
Yeah, me too.
So much history.
Yeah, and we had a great working relationship with them. It was great to be able to run, you know, 3-4 larger shows per year, and don't get me wrong, it was stressful. Being a promoter is very stressful, and kind of, you know, taking the risk of bringing in these big names who obviously cost a lot of money, and then you have flights and hotel on top of that, and then you pay all the money for the advertising and the TV commercials and the Facebook commercials and the print ads and the posters and the banners and all that stuff. And then you look at, you know, the bottom line, and you're like, oh, man, we better draw for this show. And thankfully, we always did. You know, we never lost money on any of those. It was a great time. But, you know, that's just how it goes with venues. Eventually, they sell it to somebody else who doesn't like wrestling and doesn't want wrestling part of the, you know, part of the entertainment that they're willing to put on. And then you got to find new homes. So we've been a company for over 19 years, and we've wrestled in many, many, many different buildings, and, you know, we're happy to be in the ones we are at now, and we're always looking for new ones as well.
And my personal experience, you guys always have a great crowd, particularly in Walcott. I've seen you guys at the Rust Belt two times where there was just a phenomenal crowd there. Let me turn that question on its head and ask it from a promoter standpoint. Where do you like to go? What's the best venue from a promoter standpoint?
I really loved the Cole Ballroom for those nostalgic reasons, but for me, I like wrestling anywhere that they want to have us. I love the outdoor shows. The outdoor shows are just a different kind of vibe. It's more like a party. It's more, I don't want to say it's more fun, but it's like, you know, there's just a different energy. It's a little bit looser. And everybody's there to just have a good time and be loud. And so I love the outdoor venues. We did an event in Iowa City this past summer, downtown Iowa City block party. And no lie, this isn't, you know, Carney speak here. We had over 10,000 people watching us that night, and they were glued to the action. They were loud. They were making noise. We had people climbing light posts so they could get a better view of the ring. It was just phenomenal. So for me, anytime we can do those outdoor shows, as long as the weather cooperates, those are the ones that I enjoy the most.
That sounds phenomenal. Merrick, we're going to pause one more time just to pay our dues here. Got one more promo to get in, and then we'll pick things back up in just a minute.
Sure.
In addition to bringing fire on the mic, the team at 4 Frequency Sake is still bringing it online as well. Check out 4FantasySakeQC.com this season for college DFS, Survivor League, and betting advice each and every week of this football season. Again, that is 4FantasySakeQC.com for college DFS, Survivor League, and betting advice each week during the football season.
All right, I kind of want to switch gears a little bit here. I want to transition. You know, we've got to talk about what you're doing right now other than the wrestling promotion. But I want to start off as you are now, as a promoter, as a coach, as a father, how has that changed your perspective, all of those things on the business and how you look at things now?
I mean, it's changed it completely. It's 180. You know, as a promoter, you see things from a different lens. When you're a wrestler, you're very focused on what you're doing, specifically on the in-ring product, and you don't give as much thought to other things about, you know, the whole show as a cohesive product. You know, it's not just 7 or 8 individual matches. It's an entire event, and every match should help every other match. You know, not every match is going to be a 20-minute main event. You know, you gotta save some for the guys or the gals that are in the main event. You gotta let them be the spectacle. So, you learn different things, and then there's so much more stress. There's so much more worry. You know, you have to worry about the draw. You have to worry about the sponsors and the advertisers and keeping them happy. And then, you know, whenever there's a problem that arises, you got to be the one to fix that problem. You know, having good problem solving skills is a must for any professional wrestling promoter, in my opinion. So my attitude towards the business has completely changed. And then, you know, there was just a lot of growing up that I needed to do. I wasn't, you know, you probably know back from, you know, interacting with me 10, 12 years ago, that I wasn't always the easiest person to deal with. I had a lot of moments of being just a plain old jerk. You know, I just wasn't nice to people. And a lot of that was due to the stress that I was under from the neck injury that I had suffered, and realizing that, you know, my dreams and aspirations of making it big in the business probably weren't going to happen, at least in the form of an in-ring performer. And that's not to excuse the way I treated people. When I came back from my initial year and a half hiatus after injuring my neck, I kind of went on an extensive apology tour. But as a promoter, sometimes you do got to be the jerk. You know, you're always going to have half the people hating you at any given moment, whether that's the people who are booked to lose or the people who aren't involved in the storylines, who aren't involved in the title picture. You know, not everybody can be the champion. So you'll always have half the roster that's annoyed with you in one way, shape, or form. And you got to babysit a lot of people and deal with a lot of egos, but you got to be as fair as possible. But there was just a lot of growing up that I needed to do as an individual I think I've made strides in that area. I think if you spoke to most people, they'd tell you that I'm a pretty fair individual as far as being a promoter and a trainer. So, yeah, my perspective has completely changed, as it should. And I think that that's not just a professional wrestling thing. I think that's an every line of work thing. As you get older and you learn more, your perspective does change. So,
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing I will say, I won't talk about your negativity 10, 20 years ago, 15 years ago. I wasn't a big fan of you back then when I ended my time. But I love coming to shows, and you're the first person that everybody sees when they walk in the door. You're greeting people, you're taking in the money, or at least you were the last time I was there. And your attitude is just great. I think you put off this fantastic vibe that welcomes everybody in. And it just, like with a wrestling show, you know, they say the first match is what's going to set the tone for the show. The first person you see when you walk in the door is going to set the tone, and you do a great job.
Well, thank you.
I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, you know, like all the things that used to bother you or upset you when you're younger and set you off. And I had a bit of a temper and still do, but a very short fuse. All of those things that bothered you and you thought those were the most important things in the world, as you get older, you realize it's really not that big of a deal and you don't need to sweat it so much, and things will take care of themselves. And as long as you're good to people and you take care of them, then someday when you need their help, they'll take care of you. So I'm very appreciative of the support team that I have around me that helps me run these events. And I'm very appreciative of the fans that pay their hard-earned money to come and support us in what we do. You know, it's cliche, but without the fans, we literally are not able to put on events unless we all want to wrestle for each other. And I'm not sure how well that would go. But, you know, I just, like I said, I had a lot of growing up to do. And I think, you know, taking time away from the business to get my head straight and coming back to it for the right reasons instead of just, well, I need to make it big and I need to be on TV and I need to make money and this, that, and the other. You know, instead of focusing on that, I'm focusing on I need to have fun with my friends because that's why I started this in the first place. So once I got back to that and that was my perspective, then I think I was able to be a more enjoyable person to be around.
And I honestly think that's the best part of everything you guys do. I know when I was a part of everything here, when I was doing the ring announcing 10 years ago, it was good because I felt like I was part of something. I was having a lot of fun. It was the most fun I've had that I can remember my entire life. I miss it a lot, but you know, life happens and you got to make the choices that work best for you. So unfortunately I'm not doing that anymore as much as I'd love to.
Yeah. Professional wrestling is a brotherhood. It's a family. You know, when you're in it, you got a lot of people that have your back. So, I'm thankful to have, like I said, I'm thankful to have that support team. And I think my students and my performers know that anytime they need something, they can reach out to me and I'll be the first person to drop whatever I need to drop to help them out in any way that I can.
Now, Merrick, we can't go ending the show without talking about, obviously, the Black and the Brave. We've touched on it a little bit. But, you know, my first question there, how did that come about? Was that your idea? Was that Seth's idea? Who really put that together?
So I was actually running a couple training sessions on my own when Seth was down at FCW in Florida training to be a main roster talent. And, you know, he would check in on me and ask how it was going. You know, we were friends and he just wanted to know what was up. And, you know, there were some trying times during those first couple of classes. And we were, you know, kind of talking about that. And then one day I was just at my job and I got a text from him and it said, hey, you know, how would you like to open a wrestling school with me? And I was like, well, yeah, man, that would be fantastic. You know, we're good buddies and we've always, you know, whenever we've teamed up for anything, you know, we've been able to succeed at it. So he's like, all right, well, when I get called up to the main roster and I move back home to Iowa, then that's what we'll do. And, you know, I'm like, okay, cool, sounds good or whatever. And you kind of brush it off and you go on about your day and go on about your life. And then a few months later, I'm watching whatever pay-per-view it was and the Shield debuts. And I'm like, oh, okay, he's made it to the main roster. That's pretty cool. And then he texted me like a week or two later and was like, hey, I still want to open this wrestling school. Let me kind of, you know, get my footing, you know, on this main roster, and then we'll look into it. So I want to say it was maybe 8 months or 9 months after he debuted. You know, we really set the ball in motion. We got the website up and we made the announcement, and then WWE.com did a story on us, and we had Triple H's full support and Vince McMahon's full support. And it was just like kind of wild. I was like, oh man, this isn't like a small time deal anymore. This isn't me running, you know, classes out of a church here in Davenport. This is going to be a big deal. And sure enough, you know, from when we started in late 2014, all the way up until now, we've had no problem filling up classes, and we've turned out a bunch of just quality professional wrestlers from all over the country, from all over the world. And it's just been a joy, and it really did reinvigorate me and reignite my passion for professional wrestling. And, you know, we're booked solid for the next 2 years. We don't have any openings, so we'll be announcing 2025 classes here in the next few months, and we can start accepting people for that. And you know, I'm blessed. This is what I do for a living. I don't need to do anything else. I get to be a professional wrestling trainer, and every day of my life revolves around professional wrestling, which is a blessing and a curse in a way, but way more of a blessing than it is anything else.
I feel like my life revolves around professional wrestling for different reasons. I'm in the fan category, but I have an obsession with this business. I love everything about it. And that's really how this podcast came about. Was I had a buddy who runs the For Frequency Sake podcast network. He says, hey, you and your old friend Nick, you need to get on and do a podcast. I'm like, okay. So that evolved, and then it led to me messaging you and a couple of other people lining up things. Let me ask you, Merrick, it's a 12-week program for the Academy, correct?
Yeah.
How do you structure the classes? What do those look like when someone's coming in to learn from you and Seth?
Well, we train 3 days a week for 12 weeks straight. And then there's other obligations outside of that. We're one of the only schools that has their own facility that they don't share with anyone else. It's our own building in downtown Davenport. And we have all of the fitness equipment that you could ever need, as well as a ring in there full time. And we're open 6 days a week. So we have the three training sessions, but, you know, we have open ring hours multiple times throughout the week so that current students and graduates can come in and work out for free, train in the ring for free. Once you graduate the program, you don't have to give us another dime. You are able to use the facility for free upon graduating. It's our gift to them. It's our way of paying it forward and giving back to them. So, you know, they come in and we start them no matter if they've been wrestling for a couple of years. We've had students come in who have been working for 10 years when they came to us, but we start everybody from ground zero and we work you back up. So a lot of people learn bad habits being trained elsewhere. So we start you over from square one, and that involves rolls and bumps and running the ropes. And then we get into the moves. And then, of course, we do a deep dive into ring psychology, which is where I think our school is set apart from a bunch of different schools. The fact that, you know, Seth Rollins is a multi-time world heavyweight champion. He's learned from some of the best minds in the business, be it Terry Taylor, Dusty Rhodes, Triple H, Vince McMahon, Shawn Michaels. You know, he has direct contact with these people, and he's able to pass the knowledge that he gets from them to our students. And I think that's helped me become a better professional wrestler as well, because I'm able to learn these things, and then I'm able to pass these things on as well. So, you know, we cover the in-ring psychology, we cover the promos and the character development, we cover fitness and nutrition, we cover etiquette and all of that. And I think that's what sets us apart and allows us to be the best professional wrestling school in America and the most well-rounded school in America.
So I'm going to ask you, this will be, we'll wrap things up here, but I've got one big question here. You know, we can talk about people who've come out of the Black and the Brave. You know, you've got NXT's Nathan Frazier, you've got Manders. Give us a few names. Who should we watch out for in the coming months and years? Who's going to hit it big pretty soon?
Well, we have so many quality performers. The guy I just wrestled this past Saturday, the Devil Dog, Dustin Moseley, he was in the United States Marine Corps for 8 years, so he got a little bit of a late start, but I'll tell you what, they definitely prepare you for life in the Marine Corps, and he takes direction very well. He takes initiative as well. You don't have to ask him to do something. If he sees something that needs done, he just does it. And he's a quick learner. He's only been wrestling on shows for a year. And I just main evented an entire event with him. TLC went over a half hour, and he did phenomenally. Like, just you would never be able to know that he had only been doing it for a year. So definitely keep your eyes on the Devil Dog. Heather Reckless has been making the rounds and kicking butt wherever she goes. She's done a few spots with AEW, so definitely keep her on the radar. There's just so many to narrow down. Josh B has since moved back to Minnesota, and he's doing great things for First Wrestling, which is run by Eric Cannon, and he makes his way back here every now and again, and we make sure we get him on show. So, you know, definitely keep an eye on Josh B. And then you mentioned Manders, but I mean I'd be remiss if I didn't put him over even more, because there's nobody who does it the right way more than Manders does it the right way. He just gets out there and he gets on not just one, but two, three shows every single weekend. It doesn't matter if he has to drive 8 hours for the booking or if he gets flown in or whatever it may be. It's not just a slogan for him. It's another highway. It's another town, and he's gonna bust his ass every single time out there. He works harder than almost anyone. So I'm predicting really big things for him, and his big break is gonna come here soon.
So do you get that proud papa feeling when you see the people that you've trained and brought up moving on to bigger and better things?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we have Nathan Frazier signed to WWE. We have Ziggy Dice signed to Impact. We have a wrestler by the name of Alex Taylor signed to the NWA, and he's doing great things there. We've had numerous wrestlers compete for AEW. We've had numerous wrestlers have dark matches and tryout matches for WWE. And every time it happens, I'm just so excited for them. And I'm so proud to just be a part of their journey. And I always say we put the tools in the toolbox, but it's their job to create something memorable with those tools. And they've definitely been doing it up to this point. And, you know, sky's the limit for so many of our graduates.
And I know I'm looking forward to seeing who else comes out of your guys' school to go on to bigger and better things. There's so many people that I could mention that I know that have trained there that I'm a fan of, but we could, you know, you and I could sit here and talk about wrestling for hours, I'm sure. But, you know, we're gonna wrap things up for tonight. Merrick, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, and I look forward to down the road having you back again.
Hey, yeah, absolutely. Anytime, I'll be here. It was fun to be on. Thanks for having me. I do appreciate it.
Hey, and anytime you want us to hype up one of your shows, let us know. I think that needs to wrap up. Actually, where can we find you? Where can we find you? Find the Black and the Brave SCW on social media.
All right. Well, I am at mbrave13 on Twitter and Instagram. I don't have a Facebook or anything like that. I never have. I don't plan on getting one. So if you find Merrick Brave on Facebook, that's not me. Don't talk to that person. Black and Brave is at Black and Brave on Twitter, at Black and Brave Wrestling on Instagram. SCW Pro is at SCW Pro on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Our next event will be October 8th at the Walcott Coliseum. That'll be Wicked Ways. And then on October 22nd, we'll be back at Wildwood in Iowa City. And we have plenty of events planned through the end of the year as well, and then into early next year. So we're not stopping anytime soon. We're on the road to our 20th anniversary. It'll be here soon enough.
And I'm always a supporter of independent wrestling. So I'm always happy to, you know, give a shout out to you guys. You've been fantastic, Merrick. Thank you all for tuning in. My name is the Wizard CZ. The Honorable Nick Bull will be back with us next week when we interview Matt Crotch Mayday, also of SCW. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.